Production. Recorded live.
In an effort to promote free speech, the
Nim Nuts Radio Show
does not censor its broadcasts. The statements, views, and opinions contained in our programs are those of the individual hosts and participants and are not necessarily those of the
Nim Nuts Radio Show,
its owner, or other broadcasters. Free speech. It's more than just words.
And I'm always like, yes.
And here.
Portions of today's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Yes, it is. What's time again for that show? Once again, this is the News Guy Show, and this is the News Guy, and this is another Saturday night, late nights on Saturday with the News Guy, Saturday 10 p.m. till whenever. Mostly it's midnight, right? But it does go into extra hours, you know. Many times it does go into extra hours, and this is, you know, you're hearing us over the TalkShoe Internet Radio Network. And also TalkStream Live, you know, wherever you hear it. And if you're not, then you're listening to it on a podcast, all right? Well, anyway, this is the News Guy, and we've got a lot of stuff to cover this week, actually. And I'm not going to say essentially, unlike another talk show host who constantly, completely, always says essentially with every sentence in his effing show, it makes me want to, like, you know, really – I'm not going to say names. I'm not going to embarrass the individual, but the person who does this, you could play a drinking game with this guy. If you did a shot, every time this guy said essentially on his show, you'd be drunk within like 10, 15 minutes. No problem. It's incredible. You'd probably die of alcoholic cirrhosis or something, or alcohol poisoning by the end of the show. But on this show, I will not say essentially, so you won't have to die of alcohol poisoning. Isn't that a good thing? And we got a lot of stuff to talk about this week. And, of course, at 10:30, we're going to be covering a very special News Guy show exclusive, the first and only time that this will be heard anywhere in the world, in fact. Chris Drake, who is the – I forgot his ranking within the National Socialist Movement – but he has been on the show before, as you know. He is an author as well. He's written the book Cruel New World, and he will be on the show because a good friend of his was killed this week. It was in all the newspapers internationally, and in fact, it made the European news as well because of his work as a border patrol, a citizen's border patrol individual, a leader, if you will. Yeah, I guess you could say a leader. And so it's Sergeant Drake. Okay, the intern is saying Sergeant Drake. Okay, so Sergeant Chris Drake will be calling in to talk about this, and we'll be getting into a lot of details about this. Hopefully, we'll try to nail it down a little bit because he has an interesting perspective, which is different from the stuff that you've been hearing in the news. And, you know, it's always strange. Listen, I'm not trying to play sides. I try to be as objective as possible on these issues. I'm not trying to play one side or the other or play one side against each other, you know, like some people try to do. But it always seems to me, and it always seems to be a pattern, that whenever these individuals on the far right wind up dying in one way or another, there's always this smear campaign afterwards that they're dead, you know. We saw this a couple of years ago when Eugene Terblanche, he died. He was killed, okay. There were all the allegations about homosexual behavior and all of this. Then also when this guy over in Austria, Jörg Haider, He was in some sort of a motorized tank. You know, it was a car that was like super, super secure, and it was computerized. So, you know, we won't go into that, the conspiracy theories, into that aspect of it. But, you know, after he died in a car crash, there were all these allegations and all these pictures floating around surreptitiously looking like he was, you know, involved with some gay club in Austria or something, you know. And, you know, and I could go down the list, you know. So it just is very interesting to see that this is now going on in America as well. I mean, it happened in America as well many times before. You know, I won't get into all the details with that. So anyway, listen, we're just going to have Chris Drake on at 10:30 for at least a half an hour, and it should be a very special news guy show. I'll probably isolate the interview and put it up on the Right Perspective podcast blog. But then we've also got a lot of other stuff to talk about, right? Putin has returned to the presidency. He's going to be returning to the presidency this Monday. I was listening to a little bit about it on the BBC, and the BBC, I don't know why, you know, I think I do know why, you know, it's very strange why they're kind of vilifying him. They're portraying him as like the return of a czar, you know, like czarist Russia, you know, because like a dictator is now returning, you know. You know, and they're portraying like his whole inauguration and all of this is going to be so elaborate. You know, it's going to be so like intricately photographed and filmed and broadcast over all of Russia and all of this. And I'm thinking to myself, are these people stupid? I mean, what goes on in America every 4 years when a president is elected? Is that like not completely scripted and very carefully rehearsed and widely broadcast and promoted event? These people at the BBC, they've got their own agenda for whatever reason they've got, and they're just jealous because Putin has the popularity of the people behind him, you know, and you know, the thing is that Russia, after the fall of the Soviet Union, went through a tremendous and I've gone over this in the past, you know, on the show, so I don't think I really should do it. But, you know, the Russian people went through a hell and high water, not only through the Soviet years, but then after the fall of the Soviet Union, you know, they put in this sock puppet, Yeltsin, and the oligarchs gutted the country. So Putin gets into power one way or another, right? And he starts to go after at least the oligarchs who are trying to use their wealth and their political and their wealth and their influence within society to transform this into some sort of political power so that they can take over the country completely 100%. So, yeah, he's standing up for the Russian people. You don't understand what I'm saying, people. Anyway, so this is the whole thing. I mean, it's really an unfortunate thing. Now, listen, there are other aspects to the whole Russia thing, if you will. You know, I mean, he now is, or at least Russia is now threatened to do a preemptive strike against the fledgling nuclear missile shield that NATO is building. There is also a lot of other things going on. Very kind of hush-hush, mush-mush, if you will, on these things. So it's a pretty, there is a Cold War aspect to it, that it's the return of the Cold War. And, you know, it just so coincides with the killing of Osama bin Laden, right? And how the end of the war on terror has now been declared by President Obama. So, you know, we always need a boogeyman to go after, because if we didn't, we'd just turn on ourselves, unfortunately. So this is the whole thing, and at least it keeps the economy going. So that's really all that matters at the end of the day, right?
Well,
excuse me, drinking the tea here. Got to keep the throat, you know, got to keep the throat moist. Otherwise, it's just not fun. It's not a fun show. But you know, the whole thing is that there is another thing, another aspect to this with, I guess I could go off something else. Yeah, a little too heavy. But let's see here. Mexico's economy is healthier than gringo USA. Well, you know, there is something about that where there was this new report that was published just last week where, yes, the Mexicans are not coming across the border anymore. They seem to be going back home, in fact. A lot of them are returning back home, and this is what they're at least declaring. And I don't really know if it's true or not. I'm not on the ground, you know, and I'm not in America anywhere to really see if that's true. But people are saying that because of the downturn in the American economy and because things seem to be coming somewhat stable in Mexico, that people are either not going to the United States or actually returning to Mexico. So it's a very interesting thing to see, a development in all of this. And I guess we can get into that with Chris when we talk to him this in about 15 minutes. So anyway, you know, there are a lot of other things that I want to talk about, but of course we can't really go into a lot of detail with them. But what I'm looking for the link here, because unfortunately we do have a terrible passing this week, if you will. Let's see. This is not it. No, it's on the other one. Okay, hold on. I'm going to have to. Okay. All right. Yeah, it's on the other page. Okay, hold on. Well, because this week we saw the passing of Adam Yauch. I guess that's the way that you – I've never actually said his name, and I've never heard his name said. So I don't really know if it's Yauch or Yauk or whatever, you know. But he was a member of the Beastie Boys. And, yeah, it's very strange because the Beastie Boys – I mean, I remember the Beastie Boys when I was in high school. I mean, when I was in high school, their first song – Fight for Your Right to Party came out, and that was what everybody was just completely freaking out about. And a friend of mine at that time, who had gone to a Metallica concert, he said that they played this video. It was like this. He was raving about this video. He was raving about this video more than he was raving about the Metallica concert. He was like, they played this video with these three white kids, and they were like hip hop, and they were rapping, but it was rock and roll. It was hard rock, and he was just like, "Yes, party and fight for your right to party." And he was really into it, and it was really amazing because he was a real metalhead. I mean, he was just walking around always with the leather jackets and always in the black, and you know. So this was his whole thing. So you know, at that point, you know, then all of a sudden they on MTV they started to play this, you know, Fight for Your Right to Party. And, of course, it took off from there. Now, of course, Adam Yauch, he did die of cancer. He was one of the founding members. Of course, founding members. I mean, they didn't change, you know, but they were there doing the rap and all of this kind of thing. Now, it is very strange. I mean, I don't mean to get maudlin here or kind of, dark or anything like that, but it seems that the Grim Reaper is going after Wiggers. Okay, if you think about it, first we got Dick Clark, the original Wigger. Then we got Adam Yauch, you know. Maybe you could call him a Jigger, perhaps, or a Jew Wigger. I don't know, but, you know, because he is Jewish. But then also, I don't know, but these things come in threes, so who's going to be next? You know, God forbid. I mean, somebody check on what's going on with Daryl Hall's health. You know, I don't know. Or maybe Mick Hucknall, you know. It's just... It's not a fun situation if you think about the whole thing that it comes in threes. So anyway, I saw this article today at the LA Times, and it seems to be a pretty fitting tribute to the guy, if you will. It says, Adam MCA Yauch of the Beastie Boys wasn't just one of the great wiseacres in hip-hop, an activist for Tibet. Tibet. Now, see, that was another aspect of him. He was an activist for Tibet. So, you know, you got to respect that. and a lauded film buff. He was also a hilarious critic of his own critics. In 2004, the New York Times movie writer Stephanie Zacharek penned a not-so-kind review of the band's review of Check It Out, which Yacht directed. As Gawker and several others fondly remembered, Yash fired back with a letter to the editor penned under his tongue-in-cheek director alias Nathaniel Hornblower, who sounded like a proto-Borat with delusions of cinema grandeur. Among other demands, he also asked Zacharek to compensate him for the loss of a goat incurred while reading her review, and swore that one day she would be forced to admit, quote, "He is the chancellor of all the big ones. I love his genius. I am the most his close personal friend," close quote. It might be best to counter-review a critical pan since Guns N' Roses' Get in the Ring. Let me reread that. It might be the best counter-review to a critical pan since Guns N' Roses' Get in the Ring. I never saw that video. Did they actually do a video for Guns N' Roses' Get in the Ring? You know, sidebar, but, you know, I actually like, you know, Guns N' Roses' User Illusion 1 and 2 were actually underrated, in my opinion. I like them very much. Those are, you know, I liked all the Guns N' Roses albums. I liked even the Spaghetti Incident. You know, the Spaghetti Incident was amazing. I love if you know Guns N' Roses, and a lot of you guys, of course, you got to know Guns N' Roses, pick up the Spaghetti Incident. It's a bunch of covers they did. Apparently, all of like their favorite punk rock covers. They've got Iggy Pop in there. They got all this other stuff. It's a brilliant album. The last song on the album is a cover of a Charles Manson song, and it's really, really great. I just you never thought that Charles Manson could do such a great record, but he actually does. And Axl Rose is singing it. So, getting back to Get in the Ring. Now, I don't know if they did a video for Get in the Ring, but I guess they did since they're writing it here in the LA Times. That sense of humor is one of many, many things we'll miss from Yauch. And Zacharek admits she's still in hock to him for one goat. Well, let's see if that's what it's about. Oh, because it's in a Twitter post. So, you know, so that's pretty good. You know, it's pretty nice to see. Adam Yauch passed away this week. And, you know, 43, something like that. I think he passed away at 43. That's really, really young. You know, that's just too young, in my opinion. He got the cancer, you know, and the cancer's no fun. And I guess, you know, there goes all the Jewish conspiracy theories people, right? Because, you know, and I don't mean to get into this, but, you know, they would always say, like, the Jews pick out, you know, stand up for themselves and help each other out. But this guy, you know, he got the cancer and he died. And so, you know, you would think with all the Jewish doctors, they would have helped him and they would have given him a special liver or whatever he had the cancer in, you know. But they, you know, he died. So there goes all the conspiracy theorists. All right. So there you go. Well, he did not die from cancer. Let's see here. That's what guest number 7 is saying. Let me look at the thing here. Adam Yauch, founding member of Beastie Boys, dies at 47. Yeah, 40, not 43, 47. Let's see here. He had been battling cancer for the last 3 years. That's what it says here. And then a Beastie Boy representative confirmed that Yauch, quote, passed away in his native New York City this morning after a near 3-year battle with cancer, close quote. So he died of cancer. I don't know why these people are saying they didn't die of cancer. He died of cancer. So, you know, cancer, but they don't say which kind of cancer. But I don't know. I think it was pancreatic. It had to have been some sort of like pancreatic cancer or something like that if it happened that badly, that quickly, you know. But it's pretty unfortunate either way. And 47 is just way too young to be dropping dead like that. Yeah. You know, life is just life is what you make it, but life just goes way too goddamn fast. I'm sorry, excuse my language there, but it really is. It's just it goes by too quickly. You know, it's just someone needs to put a pause button on this whole damn thing. Anyway. He OD'd. Come on. He did not OD. People are saying he OD'd. LD OD'd. Anyway, he died from cancer. So RIP. And let's see here. I guess, you know, I guess to be a follow-up from what I said last week, because I was talking last week extensively about the French elections, right? You know, Sarkozy is right on the ropes. You know, he's on the battle for his life. Now, you know, he had a debate this week, the one debate this week with, now I heard somebody say it, and I got to say, it's not Hollande, but it's like Holland. I can't even remember. I hate the French just because of the GD language, you know, because they make everything so complicated to speak and to say. It was like, why do they have to change everything all around like this? You know, it's Hollande. I think it's Hollande, or maybe it's Hollande. Maybe that's what it is, Hollande. I think that because the H is silent. But why do you put the H there then? But it just doesn't make any sense, Hollande. Anyway, something like that. So this guy, you know, is debating, and apparently, like, you know, like the BBC was saying, oh, you know, he didn't really win over anybody, and he was, you know, very lukewarm and, you know, all of this type of thing. But in the last couple of days, Sarkozy has been lessening the gap, if you will, between him and Hollande. I don't want this guy to win simply because of his name. I don't want Hollande to win simply because of his name. But nobody wants this guy up there. First off, he's like a socialist, and you know he's going to put like that far left guy in power, you know, somewhere, maybe make him the prime minister. I don't know what, you know, make him something, some muckety muck up there. So you don't want this, but, you know, so he's closing the gap. Hopefully he will win, but it's going to be very complicated. Like they were saying, oh, it's going to be very complicated. And they only give him like a 1 in 10 chance to win. You know, maybe he will win, you know, you never know with these things. But, of course, Le Pen said, hey, you know, I'm casting a blank ballot. You make your own decision. The other one, there was this other guy. I forgot his name. But he was supposed to be something of a centrist. And he got about, you know, a pretty decent showing of like 6% of the vote. And he said that he was going to vote for Hollande. But then he said to his supporters, make up your own mind. So it's kind of complicated like that, you see. Very complicated with all these things. I don't know why they do it like that. But, you know, other than that, you know, we'll just have to wait and see. The election is tomorrow. Yeah, they have a very strange law in France, and I think they do have this also in other European countries. I'm not sure. But you have to, like, stop campaigning for, like, a day. So it's like, I think, like, the campaign just ended, like, by law. It, like, ended on Friday, right? So it's like Saturday, you just like have to like sit around and like think about things, I guess, you know. And, you know, I don't think, you know, of course they could never really do that here in America, but it is a pretty good idea if you think about it. Because this whole campaign, this presidential campaign has been going on for since Obama got elected. I mean, his reelection campaign started the day he got elected or the day he got into office, if you will. So it's too much in some ways, you know. But these guys over there in France, you know, you got to think about things. You got to say, this is a very European kind of thing. You take in everything. You take in all the things that have been said. You look at all the media and you make your decision, you know. But like I said, they couldn't do that in America simply because of the free speech aspect, you know. It's a violation of the First Amendment. But then, you know, imagine if they did do that. Then what would talk radio do? You know, talk radio would have to shut down for a day. You know, all you'd hear was like, I guess like, you know, the ABC would go retro back to like the 1960s. You know, they'd bring in Dan Ingram again. I think he's still alive somewhere. So, you know, and they'd have to do something like that. I mean, it would just be too much. And they couldn't have the other guy on there, right? What's his name? The guy who's like now doing like a Saturday retro oldie show on WABC, because he does fill-ins all over the place on WABC, and he's very politically minded, you know, and he's a conservative guy. You couldn't do that. You couldn't do that because that would be an implication of an endorsement, right? And then, like, probably you couldn't play certain types of music, right? Maybe. But I don't know. I could be kind of crazy in that aspect. Anyway. People are going crazy because Van Wadi is in the chat. So, anyway. Yeah, Mark Simone. That's the guy's name. Mark Simone. He's on WABC. So, but, you know, like I said to Van Wadi, if he ever wants to call in, if he's perfectly able to do so, you know, and I will say this. I said in the chat earlier, you know, I'm not going to sandbag him. I'm not going to put on any callers against him, and you know, unless he, you know, I will ask him before he comes on, before I bring any callers on. I would say, would you like to take a call? You know, that type of thing. You know, I'm not gonna sandbag the guy. You know, so anyway. So where was I with this? Oh, you know, we got to go to the break already because we got to bring our guests on. And I didn't even get into Arizona defunding Planned Parenthood, but I guess we'll have to talk about that a little bit later. Let's see here. Where was I with this? I wanted to play the one song as we go into the break because they were saying about this, check it out. So, you know, I wanted to play Chit-Chat, check it out. So hold on. See, I should have prepared for this before I actually went into it. It would be much smoother if I did, right? Anyway, here we go. Okay, yeah, I'm going to play this. It's Beastie Boys with Chit-Chat, check it out, in memory of Adam Yauch, who passed away this week of cancer at the age of 47. It's a News Guy show. Oops. Hello.
Whose new CD to the five boroughs?
Oh, come on!
Is in stores today. Please welcome back to the program, Beastie Boys.
These seconds of TV addicts, for me the dance don't mean to be static. All you criminals in the band wants that high. Got your backstreet friend to get loud. Four doors off this is. I got you with the pensions, and no, I didn't retire. I set you up for the needle falls fire. With the info you never seen before, just gliding in the glaze and like Maureen, you know I get paid. Like a fresh sandwich to face, so not to be not there in the place, so I'm not hot, Nick at night with next we running that you know, all right. Team ain't called, no one's on, the bar ain't back, so what's up with that? I got friends and family that I respect. When I think I'm too good, they put me in check. Believe when I say I'm no better than you. Spread when the rap, so what you say they do? What the heck, your legend, you so stop.
Set the town ablaze, ready to go ablaze.
And that was the Beastie Boys live on the David Letterman show back in 2004, apparently. I think no, it couldn't have been 2004. But it says here in the thing, the comments section, it says it's 2004. But live performance on the David Letterman show, and it's really, really cool. I got really distracted by it because I thought, oh man, it's going to be a live. I wanted to play the studio version, you know. But this live version is really cool because they're coming up out of the subway and then they're like walking down the street rapping, and then they come into the studio and into the David Letterman stage, and then they're doing the whole thing right there, and then they come and they end up right in David Letterman's desk. So it was really cool. It was very, very cool. Very, very nice. I like that a lot. Anyway, and I hope you liked the song as well, because the song was actually not that bad. I have to admit, I'm not a fan of the rap genre. You know, every time I hear a Kanye song on the radio, I change the channel. Then I wind up hitting a Justin Bieber song, so I don't know what's going on. Anyway, I got to get Chris on the phone. So let's see here. All right, let me try this here. All right, Chris, 1 second. All right, and okay. Chris, here we go.
Hello?
Hi, Chris, this is News Guy calling.
Hey, Chief, what's going on?
Hey, doing good. Thanks for agreeing to come on the show. And listen, I just wanted to... extend my condolences for this tragedy that happened this week for everything. You know, it's really a shock to see. You know, I can't imagine what it's like.
Well, certainly kicking the gut. I mean, no matter how you look at it, no matter what theory you prescribe to, it is definitely a solid steel toe kick in the gut.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you are a sergeant in the NSM, right?
Yeah, staff sergeant. I went and signed back up about, I don't know, it was a while back, and I kind of missed it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I quit for a while because of the fact that, well, a couple things. It was the people in the NSM I did not like, didn't want to be around. Couldn't work with, couldn't foresee myself, you know, sharing the stage with, so to speak. And anyhow, for one reason or another, they filtered out. And I was like, all right, you know, it's time to get back, see if I can do something positive. And that part of things is, you know, that's gone really well. I mean, that's, you know, we had no issues there. And I guess I got in about the time JT had got out a couple months before,
mm-hmm.
but he and I were never in the NSM together.
Uh huh. So when he was doing all of the all of the patrols for the border, that was not as a member of the NSM.
Not the majority of time. He was pretty much doing that under U.S. Border Guard. And, of course, he was an NSM member for a while he did it, but I'd say that most of the stuff he did was, you know, just under his U.S. Border Guard pleasure. So, I mean, he was an NSM member. I'm not even sure how long he was in the NSM, to tell you the truth. I don't think it was, you know, not as long as the average person.
Right.
I mean, you know, in any kind of politics like that, no matter, you know, who you're in there with is going to be a high turnover. I mean, that's just a fact. People, you know, it's a high stress thing as far as any kind of volunteer work to begin with. Right. And being that as it is, you know, I think he was in, you know, don't take this as like the gospel, but I think he was in about a year or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Was there ever a problem or a conflict with his work with the Border Patrol as an official member of the Border Patrol, the government sanctioned Border Patrol, and his membership in the NSM?
Well, that's thing. He was a U.S. Border Guard, which is something that he came up with. And that was, that was a privately funded thing. I mean, the government would have wanted to shut that down. They would never scope a check to him for it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as unfortunate as that is, but at the same time, you know, him calling it U.S. Border Guard was kind of clever, because when you hear that, you automatically think Border Patrol, Border Enforcement, you know, that kind of thing, National Guard, and you don't really think about the fact that, you know, that's a privately funded thing, that you don't consider, wait a minute, is there something different between Border Patrol and Border Guard? Yeah, completely.
Okay.
You know.
What are the differences between the two?
Well, you know, of course, it's Border Patrol and Border Enforcement, BORTAC, and all that are all state and federally funded. So, and of course, they've got laws and rules they got to go by. Whereas, you know, me and JT and all of us were just plain old civilians who are, you know, blanketed under, you know, basically what the Constitution describes as a militia. And, you know, what we were doing was totally legal out there. I mean, we never broke any laws or anything of the sort. I mean, we weren't out there, you know, pointing guns at people or kidnapping people or anything of the sort. I mean,
yeah.
You know, and we were registered in Arizona as a desert rescue team.
Mm-hmm. Now, I remember you called into the show a while back, and we were talking about this, and, you know, I was joking around with you about it, because you were blogging about it at that point, and you were talking about how you were helping these people who were breaking into the country illegally, you know, giving them water and all sorts of things like this. So it was
Which, I mean, you know, of course, as I said on the previous show, that was just you know, to stall them long enough for Border Patrol to get there.
Right.
I mean, there's really nothing, you know. I mean, of course, you know, the cartels, they're not going to let you stop them while they've got drugs on them. That's just not going to happen. They'll shoot it out with you first.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys, if they would be in more trouble if they just gave up without a fight, you know, than anything that anybody could legally do to them. And then, of course, you've got the fact that if you've got somebody in the commission of a felony, you can't use force to get it all squared away.
Mm-hmm.
So, to make a long story short, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of laws and regulations and this, that, and the other. And, I mean, you have to be super careful out there to keep yourself from going to jail. But generally, like, for instance, we came across a couple of guys who were attached to a shipment that we intercepted the day before.
Uh-huh.
Big old truckload of marijuana. Anyways, these guys had something to do with that shipment. I think they were the spotters for it, or they're riding security or something. We call them the next day. All right, those guys gave up, no problem. Hey, you know, blah, blah. We get some water and some candy and all that. Okay, sit here. And, you know, they'll say something like, well, who are you guys?
Right.
Because first thing they think is you're a rip crew. And, you know, and actually it kind of bows in your favor a little bit when they do think you're a rip crew, just at least for a little bit. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, because they're a lot more complacent. But, you know, which I'm not, we're not a rip crew, you know, we don't want your money, we're not here to rob you, take your drugs, whatever. Sit down, we're, you know, Border Rescue. And it's funny because, like I said, I always wonder what's going through their minds. Like, they think we're in those Christian groups, and they think, you know, that we're, like, working with the cartel, what the deal is. And, of course, we get a guy out of earshot to get on the phone with border enforcement, and that's it. They go ahead and, you know, get them down there. And let me tell you. Whoever's out there complaining that they don't do their jobs, man, if you call them, you tell them, hey, we've got, like, several UDAs sitting here, you know, come do something with them, they'll be there unless you're really, really out in the boonies. They'll be there within like 15, 20 minutes.
Wow. That's...
And, I mean, you're talking about a desert. If the guy jumped up and took off running, they could run for 20 minutes. You still have a visual on them, so who cares?
Right.
You know, I mean, and what are you going to do? I run a truck?
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it was an easy, it was not as hard as people think. You just got to be careful who you bring out there, because you got guys who would go, oh, man, we're going to kill some Mexicans. Yeah, that comes out of your mouth. You're staying home. We never want to see you again. And, you know, generally, though, I mean, I tell you what, these guys, there's not as many melon pickers or migrant workers of any kind or anything like that coming across the border these days. Not like they used to be. 99% of what you get come across that border is drug-related.
Huh.
I mean, that's most of it right there.
Because there was a report that just came out last week where they were saying that the immigration, the illegal immigration into America has basically stopped. And a lot of people are actually going home even. So
yeah, well, it's just there's not – I mean, there's laws being put into place. And look at the laws. The laws, they're not draconian laws like everybody predicted they would be.
Yeah.
It's just simple stuff. It's giving, say, federal power to the state and stuff like that.
Right.
And these are reasonable laws, and look what they've done in combination with the fact our economy is so bad we can't pay them.
Right.
But look what those laws have done to, you know, cut back on all that. But generally speaking, though, you see somebody out there on the border walking around in this day and age, in 2012, like I said, there's about a 99% chance it's got to do it. To do something related to running narcotics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and that, like I said, I mean, they want to shoot out with you just about every time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it's got something to do with heavy drugs.
And so, like, that day before all of this happened, when you stopped a drug shipment from going across the border, was there a shootout?
No. This was lucky. We got lucky on that. That was just one guy. And, I mean, you know, there's not a whole lot of Rambo stuff involved in this, all right?
Okay.
We're sitting around camp getting ready to go out on patrol, and it was during a pretty big operation, one we do each year. I mean, it's more like a convention than an operation.
Huh.
And this guy rides by in this, you know, this huge, like, dually or something, big pickup truck. And he's got, obviously, bales of marijuana that are poorly covered by a canvas tarp. He rides by and waves. And, of course, I don't know, 3-4 vehicles just pour after him. And they call the sheriff's department. The sheriff's department heads them off. And everybody jumps out and stops them. And here comes the sheriff's department. And they, like I said, they put a rough estimate of $1 million on the shipment. I mean, somebody could look at it and give me a better number probably, but they came for flatbed and hauled a truck off, and that was the first contact of, you know, the whole operation. And then, you know, we've had similar encounters, but that was probably the most, that was the most effective right there. That was the most lucrative.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was done with no loss of human life. Nobody got even a busted nose over that.
Amazing.
And that's the way we'd always prefer it.
And that sounds really good. That sounds really good. Because, you know, the whole thing, when I was reading also, I was talking to you before the show, and then I was also reading your blog post about it where you were talking about this. And you were really surprised that the violence that came out of him, or at least that's alleged to have come out about him. Because maybe you can explain to us, to the audience, why you were surprised about that?
Surprised in terms of volume, I'd say it would be like you're sitting down Christmas dinner with your dad, and all of a sudden, you know, he stops carving the turkey out of the blue and takes to you with the knife.
Mm.
That's the kind of surprise we're talking about.
Mm.
I could tell you, I could sit here, I could tell you stories about humanitarian stuff I've seen this man do, until you're just sick of listening to me. I mean, for instance, just a couple months ago, we were out there, and we were riding along, and we see this car pulled over. And anyways, Tootie's like, hey, there's a car seat in there. We got to stop. So we stop, and it's a bunch of natives, and they ran out of gas. Mm-hmm. And JT gets on the phone, and he's calling everybody in the convoy who's got a gas can. These guys are out of gas. They're sitting out here in the middle of the desert. Their doors don't even lock. Mm-hmm. You know, it's two women and a small child in a car seat. So anyways, we finally find somebody that's got a gas can that's in the convoy. I keep in mind, too, man, we've been patrolling since 4 o'clock the previous morning, or that morning.
Wow.
I mean, 4 o'clock in the morning the night before. I mean, you know, you catch little cat naps here and there where you can, but it's like any other kind of military, paramilitary operation where, you know, I mean, you just sleep's not on the schedule. It's just not on the menu.
Right.
Anyhow, we're sitting there, and I mean, I could see people were getting a little pissed off about it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, dude, JT, call the sheriff's department, get them down here. I mean, you know, and of course, I keep in mind, he was kind of campaigning in that county, too. So, you know, I mean, that, let's be fair. But, you know, he finally gets some gas and pours it in there, and they get them up and rolling, and they're on their way.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, we saw stuff like that all day long. Go ahead.
He was very politically active. He tried to run for office for a couple of times. He actually got a position within the Republican Party as a delegate or something along those lines, right?
I think he was a Republican organizer.
Okay.
And it's funny because, you know, a lot of people right now that are convinced that he's guilty of all the things that he's being accused of. A lot of people are comparing him to John Wayne Gacy.
Oh.
We've got John Wayne Gacy had a similar position.
Oh, that's right.
In the Democrat Party. He even got a picture of him and the First Lady, Ms. Carter.
Right.
I can't think of her first name offhand, but
yeah, I think her name was Lily.
You know,
Because I was listening, I was reading this Talking Points memo, and they were listing his. He had a lot of ties to the Republican Party in Arizona. He acknowledged that he was working extensively for Mormon charities there, and he had State Senator Russell Pierce as a mentor, Mesa Community College Republican Club. He was a member of. The former Speaker of the House, Jeff Grosskos, was also, I guess I could say, a supporter or a mentor. Or, you know, he was affiliated with the guy. So he was very well connected within the Republican Party of Arizona. It was very interesting to see that.
And, you know, the guy had about 10 projects going at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there'd be 5 of them would burn out. And then you hear about the 5 that he was able to go and bear fruit with, and it's like, wow, man, this guy's really got a busy schedule. And it's like, dude, he had 5 more things he didn't have time, he had to let fly, you know?
Right.
And, you know, for right or wrong, good or bad, he's a busy, busy man.
Yeah.
I mean, and he and I have not sat down until I got on the show here and thought about all the stuff, all the irons he and I had to fire.
Mm-hmm.
We were writing a book together called Rip Crew.
Oh.
And it was kind of thing, he'd write a chapter, I'd write a chapter. And Rip Crew was all about, it's kind of funny because, like, he'd get pissed off and be like, oh, you know what, we're going to write it, we're going to call it American Rip Crew. It's going to be about, we go out there, these people are whipping off drug dealers and this, that, and the other. And I'm like, you know, okay, JT, let's not write a book about something that we're so frequently accused of doing. You know? So, anyhow, but it was all about the book. And I don't know if I'll ever finish it now. I mean, we got about 3/4 of the way done. It's a pretty good little action novel, but it's all about a guy whose brother gets killed out on the border, and something drug related. And this guy is a, you know, typical, you know, my style of writing. I don't write about Navy SEAL special forces fighter pilots. You know what I mean? I write about
stuff that you know,
people we all know.
Right.
And yeah, this guy is a he's an ex-convict.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a bruiser. He's a guy that goes and he's a welder, and you know, he goes out there and starts fighting on the border, and it gets really bad. And you know, and of course, you know, I always dovetail all my books together. They're all part of the same universe. But he and I were doing that, and that was a pretty busy project. And then we had veterans of domestic wars, which we were doing. The only problem we got with the veterans of domestic wars is the fact that we found out there's a thing about domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
That uses a similar name, and we're trying to work around that. That was going to be a thing where it didn't matter, you know, it wasn't a racialist thing or a political thing. It's just anybody that went and has fought on the border, you know, the domestic war that we have right now. You know, we want to have some sort of charity or some kind of outreach thing for them, but we were working on putting that together, and that was coming by, you know, piece at a time, a month here and a month there.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course we had all kinds of just you know, stuff related to U.S. Border Guard.
Yeah.
You know, we're always trying to get our hands on armored vehicle. That was an ongoing thing. There was a time, I mean, of course it's well documented that JT said he wanted to get a tank. You know, and I was like, JT, we don't need a tank, man. I mean, number one, we ain't got no, it takes like 15, 20 guys to keep a tank in the field. We need 15 guys out there, you know, humping a pack.
Right.
With a pair of binoculars and a spotting scope. And I said, we don't have the money. I said, the APC, you know, excluding something like a Bradley, you know, those things are meant to be cared for by the guys that's driving them, mainly.
Yeah.
So I'd find that was just such a that was the number two big thing he and I argued about, and we argued all the time. I mean, not really argue, but we debate on stuff. For instance, you never heard two men argue more about the AK platform versus the AR platform.
Okay.
You know, I mean, you got this. You know, JT pissed red, white, and blue. So you know, of course, you know, an AK was an inferior, crappy, fall apart, stamp metal piece of junk, you know. And I carried one religiously. Everything I had was AK platform. Sell that shit. Don't come back out here with that crap. And I'm like, all right, that's fine. I was like, I'll buy me an AR-15, JT, and I'll sit here in Georgia with it because it's either a plane ticket and an AK, okay, or I can buy an AR and I can go down the shooting range and shoot it. You know, and that's it. Can't go to the desert with it. So he got pissed off, and he was like, I'll take care of this shit. I'll call you back. He was like, all right. Anyways, didn't hear from him for a little while. He called back about the next day. He goes, okay, all right, you're getting a package. And I'm like, well, what? He's like, well, all right, I didn't send a receiver because you can't mail a receiver, but everything else is there. You got to get your own receiver. She got AR-15 coming. I'm like, well, damn, it was for Christmas. And for Christmas, he sent me this AR, which I think other people threw in on parts too a little bit. But the AR, I mean, it's one nicer bull barrel, full-sized ARs. I mean, it was not a Christmas card. I mean, it was one nicer gift than was ever gave me in my life.
Sweet.
And, I tell you, the irony of it is the day after he died and all that stuff happened, I got the last couple parts I needed to complete the rifle in the mail. I was like, jeez, weird,
yeah,
ominous. Yeah. But, I mean, like I said, generous person. He almost got himself arrested when I tried to get me to the airport. I mean, I could say this now, he's dead. But we were in a rental, and we were headed to the airport, and I was like, man, I'll miss a flight. I was like, he's like, because he kept kind of stalling, you know, we're out in the desert. And I mean, getting him out of there, that's like trying to drag a three-year-old out of a playground. And I'm like, JT, man, I got a plane to catch, man. Come on, dude. And fortunate for me, JT didn't, I guess he didn't realize if you miss your plane, then it's just, you know, it's going to set you back a couple of hours in a big place like Phoenix, and it's going to put you on another one, and no big deal. Fortunately for me, I don't think JT flew enough to realize that it's not that simple. I was like, JT, I'll miss my plane. I won't be able to leave for the bar. I'll lose my job. So, anyhow, do whatever you got to do to get him to take you back. But he was freaking out. He was driving through traffic, and we finally get to the airport. And the road in the airport closed. Had all kinds of barriers and signs. And JT's like, oh, damn, screw this, man. And he goes around the barrier and stuff. I said, JT, dude, look, man. All due respect, I appreciate what you're doing. But with all the stuff we got in this car, this is the second time I had a conversation like this with somebody. All this stuff we got in this car, we come barreling down a road that's closed towards an international airport. Yeah. And he turned around. I was like, seriously, before we are all shot dead on sight, you know, I mean, that's Lord. I mean, you think you're getting bad press now, but anyhow, so I mean, with him, there was always something crazy going on like that. I mean, it was just, you know, and he finally, I called the airport and they said, okay, take this road and you'll be there. But anyhow, I mean, you know, and he wasn't quite as racially rigid as he tried to make people think he was.
Okay. Yeah, because
I mean, I guess that's obvious too now.
Yeah, because he did say a lot of things when he was running for office, and that has to be said. I said before they had a lot of ties, extensive ties with the Republicans in Arizona, but he also ran as a Democrat. And he did say that he came from a very liberal background, and he was also raised in something you could say like a Democratic household. And he did run. I think the last office that he was running for before he died was on the Democrat side.
Yeah, I think that was more of kind of out of respect for Pierce and them. You know, well, the guy, his Republican mentor, because. I feel like he felt that, you know, sign up as Republican, that the press was going to take that and run with it and try to act like they were still connected.
Right.
And I don't think he ever meant the guy any harm. He never had an ill word to say about the man around me. I mean, he bad-mouthed religion like crazy.
Go ahead.
He had bad-mouthed religion like crazy, and apparently the guy was a big Mormon. And JT used to be a Mormon, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had all kinds of religious debates, too, all the time, too. And he stayed on the outs of people. But the only thing I think he had negative to say was about the guy's religion. It was just he didn't believe in.
Right.
He's atheist. And, you know, I tell you, you got to have some kind of spiritual grounding of some kind, even if it's ancestral religion or... I mean, if you want to go Christian, Buddhist, whatever, man. I mean, you got to have some place spiritually to hang your hat. And I feel like a lot of times in his life, he really could have used more than he had.
Uh-huh.
So,
because when he was running for office, he said a lot of things that were very, racist, and things, you know, things.
Oh yeah,
you know, things that
over the top racist.
And the shocking thing about all of this, I mean, not the shocking thing, but one aspect of the shocking whole thing of this is that his girlfriend had a Hispanic last name, and everybody in this situation were Hispanic, and.
You know what? I never knew his girlfriend's last name. I met her.
Uh-huh.
And nice lady, good looking.
Well, she might be, actually be a white Hispanic, unlike the other guy, Zimmerman.
Yeah, for real. Dude, my dog got more Aryan blood than that guy. But the thing is, I think she was married to a guy at one time. This guy Hugo, I can't think of his last. I can't think of any of their last names. But I've never met Hugo before, but I saw his picture and saw him in videos on the news. And he's, you know, one of your whiter looking possible Hispanics. I mean, if you saw him standing in a crowd of white guys, you wouldn't look twice at him.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And I mean, he's probably like half Mexican, or, you know, he's probably kind of thing. There's a term for your Hispanic Cubans,
mm-hmm.
but you know, of course, people always Cuban. They treat that like it's a race of people instead of a country. I mean,
right.
There's blacks live in Cuba, Hispanic natives, and there's also a lot of white people live in Cuba. I mean,
right.
You know, public school, man. But anyhow,
yeah, and there were actually
before
Castro took over, there was something of a racial segregation between the whites and the whites and the blacks in Cuba. So
yeah, you know what, that stuff, segregation, you know, being a product of multiculturalism, all that is providing a ready-made foothold for communism.
Right.
You know, I mean, like I said, you know, whether you agree with multiculturalism or not, that right there is always a good place for the communists to get in there and go, okay, here's a flaw in your system.
Yeah.
The flaw is a graphic thing, not a...
Yeah, the thing is, I mean, not to interject here, but, you know, from what I've seen, you know, just in even homogenous societies where everybody is white and of the same culture, of the same race, of the basically the same religion, I mean, they will use man against woman, and they will inject feminism on a hyper level to divide the people. So it's just they will just find whatever.
And see, and you're probably one of the few people I've talked to that get that.
Yeah, yeah.
That all these things, all these racial trials and tribulations in this country, that's just fuel for the police state.
Mm-hmm.
And we've all got different ideas on how to take away that tool of police state. I mean, look at it and say, you know, me from the racialist point of view, I'd say, well, you know, that's easy. We'll take away the need for the police state because multiculturalism will work as long as you've got a soldier on the street corner.
That's,
you know?
That's right. As long as government is controlling everything and regulating that people have to be nice to each other.
Right. And that gives them every excuse they need. And my solution is, okay, well, we'll just take that away by taking everybody that's, you know, one ethnicity and putting them somewhere and this, that, and the other. And, you know, of course, well, I mean, that's met with furious opposition. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, though, too, you know, it's kind of funny because you could tell that, you know, your little high school dropout skinhead guy,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's all, man, the world's going to be perfect, you know. I'm going to be on top. And, you know, you start realizing that it's kind of a utopian thing in a way.
And,
you know, it's kind of a, okay, we just do this one step and everything's going to be fine.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, you're not getting rid of war. You're not getting rid of, all you're doing is making it where our culture will survive and will stay strong. You're not, you know, and people get into this thinking.
You're not addressing the problems within society, because in America, where everything is so multicultural, so multiracial, everything is filtered through 200 years of slavery and all of these other racial aspects that go along with that. But if you do examine things in a homogenous society, you still see that they're there. But you don't have to worry about all of that racial stuff. You know, you can actually deal with police brutality as it actually is, police brutality,
yeah.
For example. And when you look at other societies where they have had this division of races and cultures, and where the government steps in and just winds up becoming a dictatorship, like in Yugoslavia, for example, or even in Iraq, you know, where Saddam, he clamped down on the Sunnis and the Shias, and everything was fine until Saddam was gone, and now you see what's going on in Iraq, and you see what happened in Yugoslavia after they got rid of the dictatorship there. It just is always going to come up, and it has to be maybe on a voluntary level, a voluntary segregation.
Yeah, and you see, and that's why I kind of flip PLEs and stuff like that. And, I mean, if you do it at a social level, and it, you say, okay, I'm doing this at a social level because this is affecting my freedom, and socially I'm going to save it myself. You know, it's kind of funny because you say that, and give the left a lot of pause because they're like, well, well, what do we say? How can we demonize that? But we can't have them doing it that way because, you know, I mean, what if everybody decides that? Then we'll be out of a job, you know?
Well, there will still be people who are who want to mix and who don't mind being around people of other races and other cultures, and that's perfectly fine. For those people who want to do it, they can do it. And for those people who don't want to do it, who want to be around all white Italian people or white Irish people or just white people in general or people who want to be among black people, you know, blacks who want to be among black people, it's just their decision. It's their freedom.
In the core of everything, that's all anybody in this is asking for. If you hear somebody who is saying, well, I want to see Rise of the South, bring back slavery. Okay, well, that new guy, that's what we commonly call here in America is a fucking idiot. You know? I mean, that's somebody that, you know, all he wants to do is take the flaw of design just crash against a tree and, you know, put it back together best he can and try to go down the road with it again.
Right.
I mean, the whole problem we're in right now is all because of people saying, well, you know, man, these people will never come out from under whatever. Let's make them slaves or let's bring these people across the border. We'll work for 2 hours now. I mean, that's cool. They'll always work for 2 hours now.
Right.
It's not a natural order of things. It's not. And I get tired of people who talk out of both sides of their mouth with it. You know, they'll talk about, oh, man, I hate multiculturalism and blah, blah, blah. And at one time, man, we had these so-and-so's under our boot. And, well, dude, that's still multiculturalism.
And
multiracialism.
And when you look at it, when people say that they're against against slavery, for example, you know, they're against slavery, but then they're all in favor of people coming across into their country illegally or legally and working for half or a quarter of the amount that a person indigenous, a citizen of the country, is working for. Is that not slavery? Or maybe indentured servitude? Because, okay, eventually they're going to go back home. So maybe that's indentured servitude, not slavery.
The only thing is, it's really the worst of slavery than slavery because, you know, during the slave era in this country, the slave owners paid for the slave. They paid for his medical. They paid for his food. They paid for his shelter.
Right.
Now what we're doing is we've got where the working class taxpaying people pay for the slave, and all the rich man's got to do is pay him a little something to make him show up every day.
Yeah, that's
that's the best deal I've ever heard in my life for a rich man. I mean, that couldn't be any better. And people go out there and they'll say, oh, well, one day all the workers will unite, and that's why we support it. Oh, good grief, man. You know what? That's about like sitting there looking up at the stars thinking that any minute down a spaceship's going to come down and get you and your followers and transport you to some other, you know, utopian world. I mean, it's right up there with that all the workers are going to unite and overthrow and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I mean, now they're going to unite and overthrow, blah, blah, blah. They're going to have a bloody ass civil war over and over again until somebody comes out on top. Then we're right back to square one. Look at France. Perfect example.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
But
hey, let me ask
getting back,
I wanted to ask you about this because before you were saying about Reddy wanted to get a tank and all this, because I was reading here, they were saying that, I found this in the Arizona Republic, they were saying that Reddy was being investigated by the FBI over terrorism claims and allegations that he had stolen weapons from the military. And then police who were investigating the crime scene, they found chemicals and military-grade munitions. So,
see, and that's kind of wild to me, too. And that adds to, you know, your conspiracy theories are all over that.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you know, I had no idea he had anything like that or anybody he knew had anything like that. And I don't see how that slipped past anybody. I mean, that's just, it's just very unusual. And besides that, I mean, okay, the 40-millimeter grenades, I mean, you know, the thing about a 40-millimeter grenade is you need a 40-millimeter launcher to go with it.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew he had a 37-millimeter, and I don't know how much you know about this kind of thing, but 37-millimeter launcher is the most legal thing on earth.
Right.
I mean, it's you can be a full-time convicted felon and purchase one. I mean, they're not regulated. Mm-hmm. The way it works, and I looked into this because Harry Hughes was lost and presumed dead about 4 weeks ago, and he had these lethal flares. I think they're 12-gauge flares even, and he was fine, and nobody could see him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here he is, you know, popping off these flares. He's in the desert 5 days. JT and the team went out there. As actually, Hoyt went out there with him. Mm-hmm. One of the guys that was killed last week, mm-hmm. Or this week. And,
right.
Hoyt,
Hoyt was the boyfriend of the let me see here. There was the daughter.
Amber.
Right.
Boyfriend of a daughter, and right. He actually went out there with JT. He's one of the guys that found Harry and brought him back. Mm-hmm. And this broke the discussion of, okay, we need more powerful flares for when people get lost. So, I mean, you talk to me like, we're talking 37-millimeter stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was like, all right, I'm going to get a 37-millimeter pistol flare launcher.
Mm-hmm.
I think every team, every squad ought to have at least one 37-millimeter in their ranks.
Right.
Now, what are you doing with 40-millimeter stuff? I have no idea. The 37-millimeter, well, you know, I mean, conceivably, I guess you could fire 40-millimeter out of it, but you'd be, I mean, you're talking about a flare launcher versus a military-grade, you know, projectile with a lot higher velocity, a lot higher pressure. I mean, that's where it takes your life in your own hands and play off that stuff. And
right.
Like I said, I have no idea why you had those.
Right.
I mean, like I said, you know, the 37-millimeter launcher was, that's perfectly real. They brought that up, like, oh, yeah, pyrotechnics, flare lines, and this, that, and the other. And, I mean, that's, like I said, that's considered a safety device. Now, I will say this for all you kids at home. If you take your 37-millimeter launcher and you load it with a beanbag round or you load it with, I've never seen one, but I know they make shotgun rounds for them, all kinds of stuff. If you do that, you have to register it as a destructive device with ATF. And that's all over the internet. If anybody wants to get into 37-millimeter launchers, they need to really look at this stuff because you can buy a beanbag round, a less than lethal round, and it's considered a destructive device. And if they can't shoot the beanbag round, or that you can shoot a beanbag or baton or whatever out of your launcher, then that thing's a destructive device. I don't think it's only a firearm, but it's a destructive device, and you can get charged with it. So people need to be real careful with that stuff. And then you run into stuff like this, where, okay, here's this guy, you know, they're going through his stuff and they find all these things, and these are, say, 40-millimeter anti-tank. I'm sorry, there's no state union, there's no law out there, you know, that says any civilian can own those. That's nothing you can file that I'm aware of. Somebody can correct me on this. I don't think there's any form you fill out that allows you to get them.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. It's just that perplexes me. I don't know what in the heck you're using for.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But, I mean, a lot of people think they're playing it there, too.
Because you were saying that John Hoyt, he was also on the patrols?
Yeah, he was. Him and JT were friends. I'd met him once.
Okay.
Interesting.
Because, all right.
I mean, they were good buddies. I thought. I mean, you know, I still think that.
Because, all right, Amber Medeiros, that was Lisa's daughter. Lisa was JT's girlfriend. Amber was Lisa's daughter. John Hoyt was Amber's boyfriend. And then, of course, 2-year-old Lily, the child of Amber. So that's interesting to see.
Well, and the child, Lily. Lily was a child of a Native American fella, which I never met, who used to patrol JT too. You'll see him in some of the videos and stuff. And him and JT parted ways. I don't think they had any kind of falling out or anything. I think they just, you know, JT was getting more. Maybe I'm just guessing. I'm speculating here. This isn't official or anything, but maybe JT's politics were getting a little more focused, and this guy didn't feel comfortable. I don't know, because I know the press. The one time I heard him talk on camera, the press was kind of throwing his face, going, "Don't you know that JT wants to kill all Native Americans?" You know, and that buzzword crap. You know, but I don't know. I mean, I never heard anything negative about that guy. I always heard he's a real super good guy and all that, and JT spoke really highly of him. And, of course,
it is.
JT was taking care of his baby, helping, trying to.
Yeah, and not to, you know, not to, you know, kind of get off on the tangent, but there, you know, I mean, now it's been exposed that the head of the NSM, he's involved with a woman who has a mixed-race child.
You know what, I hate to address that, but maybe I should.
Uh-huh.
That's Commander Jeff Scoop, and he got kind of blindsided with that.
But,
Jeff Scoop,
not to interrupt you for a second, but there, Scoop, I saw actually on the 60 Minutes piece about the other guy who was, who was killed by his son in the NSM. There's video of a rally that they did. And the child is there, very dark, very, you know, mixed race. They're holding the banner of the NSM, and it's very interesting to see that, you know.
Which, where was this at?
You
email me that, because.
Okay. Maybe email you the rules from it or something.
Yeah, the child in question, talking about Jonas Scoop and all that, that wasn't anything that Jeff found out through natural channels. I mean, he got hit with that out of the blue. I mean, when it landed at his doorstep, I mean, this is the problem with the internet, because when you date somebody and a relationship starts out online, well, you're getting a tailor-made person that's, you know, going to be exactly who they think you want them to be. And, you know, apparently she'd, you know, not told him about it, kept it a secret. And, you know, of course, once it became apparent that she had a mixed race daughter from a previous relationship or marriage, I'm not sure which one it was, then he divorced her. And, you know, she did a lot of damage to the party. She stole from him, stole the membership list and put that out there. And, well, I'll say this, I don't think it really did any damage to the party. Now, my address has already been out there for years. And I just started getting all these really cool white power publications in the mail and stuff. And I was like, oh, hell yeah. I was like, this is awesome. Maybe it's a good thing they got a membership list, because, you know, here I am, I keep getting like all these free magazines. And once in a while I get like a little letter saying, you know, oh, something stupid. But, you know, I mean, who cares, man? I mean, that's, you know, if somebody writes you a letter cursing you out, that's actually better than somebody that sends you a piece of junk mail for a faulty product. They're tending to rip you off if you purchase. Okay? You can cuss me out, guess what? My bank account stays exactly the same. I mean,
that's right.
Nothing changes. But yeah. So anyways, I mean, you're going to hurt you through the mail or sending something nefarious. But anyhow, I mean, this with the U.S. Border Guard wasn't a racialist thing. And a lot of people, I can see where people are confused on that because of the media and the way they're treating all things racist, JT Reddy, you know. But U.S. Border Guard had plenty of people who were mainly most of the time, the people that you saw that are non-white participating in U.S. Border Guard activities were Native American, or they might have been like half or quarter Hispanic or something like that. I mean, there weren't, you know, it was kind of dim, but not super dark, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
But,
you know, being in that situation, you would need to have native Spanish speakers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, I mean, you know, I'm a Spanish-speaking individual, but I'm not a native.
Okay.
I mean, I've stumbled through it like I'm a foreigner, which I am as far as they're concerned.
Sure.
And, you know, you had a lot of Native Americans who participated because of the fact that, you know, most of the problems were right there on their reserve.
Right.
Or, you know, I mean, because the reserve in question was, it ran along the Mexican-U.S. border. And they were, the Native Americans in the area were very supportive of him. And...
It would also,
so,
not to cut you off, but it does strike to me that a person could be pro-white but yet pro-American at the same time and be accepting of all races. Because you can love,
well,
you know?
It's got, you know what? It's becoming more and more the case as time goes by and people are starting to break away from the old stereotypes and go, you know what? Let's do not what Hollywood is, you know, laid out for us to do. Let's do what works. And, you know, if JP was the fire-breathing, kill them all, gas the Jews, you know, racist individual that the media is making him out to be, then, you know, you'd have a hard time explaining the racial makeup of his operations, of his team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like I said, he had a lot of people who were not white who were out there and helping him. And there was, I mean, you know, there was even a few people who were half Jewish even. And, I mean, it's not, and JT had, at one time, he told me he had an ex-Masada guy out there who came out, not, he wasn't a U.S. Forest Guard member, but he came out just to do it. And, you know, there's that common goal there that they shared, and they were able to overcome the politics.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're seeing that a lot more these days.
I did see something where he was quoted as saying that he had raised money to help maybe provide body armor for IDF soldiers or something along those lines also.
I don't know when he would have done that. I mean, it seems like I heard something. He never mentioned that to me personally.
Okay.
I mean, you know, it's probably something, not something he'd brag about to me anyhow. But that wouldn't surprise me that dudes – you know, he's raised at a time probably the gross national product of, you know, a smaller country for charity and stuff like that. He was real good at that kind of thing. I mean, that's, you know, love him, hate him, or think he's a, you know, whatever. He's real good at raising money for charities and stuff and getting the word out on that. But,
you know, it seems to me that when you're mentioning that, because it pops in my head, you know, raising money is really, really, especially today with the way that politics is, raising money is really important. And that, you know, and that could be even more of an asset than somebody who can get up there and give an effective speech. And, you know, it's just this last quote here that I saw in one of these articles from Mark Potok of the SPLC. He says, the U.S. border guard is probably finished. It really did revolve around JT Reddy. And, you know, that kind of lends to a lot of the conspiracy theories that are out there about all of this, you know, that maybe they did want to stop this, you know, and that, you know, they saw that he was the linchpin of all of this and that he was.
Well, you know, it's messed up because, you know, I'm always the guy to make fun of the Alex Jones types and all the conspiracy theory, Art Bell people and all that.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I'm always the guy. Discount that stuff and look, man, a tree is a tree. You don't believe me? Take off running and nail yourself into it. You know, I mean, you know, I'm always one to try to get people more grounded in reality. But with this, man, I don't know what to think.
Right.
I mean, it blows my mind. What I saw, you know, nobody shot. You know, nobody just ended up dead by, you know, something similar to a spontaneous combustion. I mean, there were shooters, or sorry, shooter. Somebody killed everybody. That's an undisputable fact in that house, minus the youngest daughter. And, you know, I mean, looking at JT Reddy that I knew versus the person he had to be to commit such a heinous, bloodthirsty, reptilian type of crime, You know, that pushes me right into the conspiracy theory crowd. And that's a place I've never been.
Yeah. And yet, also based on what you have written and you said to me previously, that he was a very loving person. He was very sharing and kind and good. And it doesn't fit into what... You
know. Well, he'd get on the phone and talk to my daughter at length.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's 3 years old. Mm-hmm. And she'd babble and he'd just, yeah, sweetheart, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know, this is somebody where, you know...
He was a very. This was just for him to do. If he actually did this, it was so completely out of character for him that it just doesn't make any sense. And then,
completely.
And then also, what I said earlier on the show, you know, this always comes out with these right wing guys who wind up dead or killed in some manner. Afterwards, then all of this horrible stuff comes out about these people. You know, they were gay, they were this, they were that, the other thing. You know, from Terre Blanche on down. It always goes to these people. And so the smear campaign always results. So it's very strange, you know. And, of course, all of this stuff, this negative stuff that's been coming out would lend to would support this theory that he went off and did all this stuff. But, you know, you as a person who was there and knew him on a very intimate level on a day-to-day basis, you know, that just flies in the face of all of this. So it's a very important thing to keep in mind.
And it's just like,
I'm sorry, I can't really hear you. You're really far away.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
I think there's a power line if you're walking up under this interfering. But just like I wrote on my blog about, you know, him offering after I suggested that he come up and play Santa Claus at my house Christmas morning.
Mm-hmm.
And we never went through with it because of logistics, but he was in the area and was totally willing to do it. You know, he's kind of like, oh, this is because I'm fat, right? It's messed up, Drake. I'm like, nah, dude. It's just because, you know, it's just kind of funny because, I mean, you know, he's the only person I could think of that would have done something like that. And he volunteered to, and, you know, we had other plans and that, this, that, and the other. But, I mean... You know, I just, like I said, I never saw any brutality. Mm-hmm. And you're talking, I mean, let's face it, man, I ain't no angel. I mean, I've been fighting and, you know, getting into it my whole life. And, I've done some brutal things that are well documented. And, you know, I'm not proud of it or apologetic either.
Mm-hmm.
But JT... was never on the level of, like, for instance, me and my friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he wasn't a, you know, kick somebody unconscious skinhead. And I'm not now. I mean, I'm a nice guy you ever want to meet. I'm, you know, I'm mama's baby's boy, you know. No reason for law enforcement to check into me. But, yeah, right. Lord, I'm expecting that any time now, too, by the way. But the long and the short of it, I mean, JT... he didn't have any kind of thuggish background.
Right.
And I mean, if I have to make myself look a little bad to illustrate his point, I'll do so. But, you know, he never had, I mean, he came out of the Marines. He had kind of a rough time in there. That's all sealed. Nobody knows what happened. Mm-hmm. That's something he was very vague on. Mm-hmm. And the records on what actually happened and why he got kicked out and what all went down. I mean, let me put it this way. Have you read anything about it in the press? I mean, it's sealed to them too.
Yeah.
And
it's strange.
There's some, it's a very unusual, I don't know.
The thing is, if the media were really being so objective and unbiased in their reporting, they would include all of these different things that you're talking about and the anecdotes and the points that bring up these questions about why would this guy do these things. And that's really the very strange part about it. And I think we should
talk. Well, you know, if I got to be a conspiracy theorist for just a minute.
Sure.
Okay, and once again, this is theory. But I really, if it didn't go down the way the press says it went down, and they want to make it look like it did as the way it did, that I can't help but wonder if it's not somehow related to all the egg on the face they got from the Trayvon Martin thing. You know, they had a big old giant race bait thing that kind of, I mean, it's still going, and we're still liable to see a big fallout still. But, you know, they thought they had a white guy shooting a black guy.
And
they thought they had an evil right winger, you know, that they could show right here before election time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
so now,
I don't know. I mean, it's
very strange. But I think we should just I think we should leave it at there. And I think that what we'll have to see, we'll just see how this develops. And, you know, if you ever, you know, want to come back on, or, you know, keep in touch, and hopefully.
Well, here's something just on a closing note you've got to think about, too.
Yes.
Is how vague the law enforcement community has been on this.
Yeah.
You know, how they've been real slow on, now, of course, now, they, you know, they've all but officially called him the shooter.
Mm-hmm.
And they've all but, you know, nailed that down. Mm-hmm. I mean, the media is already saying it. I mean, they've been saying it.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's my whole point. I mean, the media has indicted the guy already, as they always do with these things.
Right. But if it was as cut and dry as the media's making it out to be, then they wouldn't be leading the charge. Law enforcement be leading the charge. They'd be up there saying, this is how it went down. Here's your step-by-step diagram of everything that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I hadn't seen that yet. I mean, I think what they're going to wait to happen is for everything to kind of die down. Then they're going to come out and say, okay, well, there was a little more to it than, you know, they're going to wait till the press has all the mileage out of it they can. Mm-hmm. Then they're going to say, all right, well, you know,
they'll come back.
Somebody slipped a banana peel or whatever, and you're going to have some more details that makes it a little more, you know, not as black and white, but a little more shade of gray to it.
Right, because
at least you're going to see that.
Because the public focus on the media is only for a couple of days, and once that period dies off, anything else that comes will show up in the media, but only maybe on page 6, maybe page
7. Exactly.
And it won't have the same effect. And people still remember, oh, white supremacist, and yet another white supremacist goes so crazy and kills his family, you know, that type of thing.
And you see, it wasn't like when you had in the past people who do something, and it was a calculated, like if you look at Rob and Armand Carr, if they see the talk show is, if they do that, it's systematic, you know, they hate reporting that kind of stuff because that shows it's good and scary. And it sells newspapers. But it's not quite, it's something that somebody could possibly glamorize. There's no way humanly possible to glamorize a dead 2-year-old child.
That's right.
Absolutely not. You cannot paint that in a good light. I don't care your religious background, your ethnic background, whatever.
Yeah.
And I, you know, like I said, I mean, I'm not the guy at the answers here. All I can do for you people tell you about J.P. Reddy that I knew.
Right.
You know, I can't tell you what happened there because I wasn't there.
Nice.
I mean, the night before I was talking to J.P. and we were talking about a movie. I mean, that was it. He wanted to know. He recommended a movie to me. One of them, I finally got around to watching it. You know how friends get bitchy about, dude, you watch that movie I told you to watch or what? You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And I said, yeah, I did watch it. Here's what I'll think about it. I think it was, you know, awesome movie. You ever seen that movie, Ninth Company?
No, I have not seen that movie, no.
You got Netflix?
Not here. I don't think I have it here. I've never tried it out, but I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, but just Google Ninth Company. If you're obviously a Cold War child like me,
yes,
I mean you really dig it. It's about the Soviet occupation in Afghanistan,
uh-huh.
Kind of their own version of Platoon.
Okay,
you know. But you know, it was just kind of a movie we all liked. Ironically, you know, we're all nationalist or national socialist or something to that effect. And
right.
I mean, you know, here we are, one of the most, I mean, this movie's funded, you know, out of the coffers of communism, you know, and we're just such big, huge fans of it. But, oh, and once again, you know, things have to be black and white for the idiot. Things have to be black and white for the guy that, hey, he ain't got a real thinking mind, man. He's okay, just got off work. What do I do now? Beer, McDonald's, home, sleep, get up, repeat, you know?
That's right.
That guy, he can have it black and white all day. That's cool. But the thinkers among us, you know, we all realize, hopefully at least, that this world is not as simple as people think. It's very complicated, and things are not as cut and dry.
Mm-hmm.
Like this guy was, I mean, he wasn't a full-time, all-day, everyday, fire-breathing racist,
right.
Like they want to say. You know, I mean, he was, you know, no doubt he's racist, you know, and all that. It's pretty obvious. I mean, his politics, what he had to say and everything. But as far as somebody that was some sort of genocidal maniac that, you know, had dreams.
He really was. Yeah, it seems that he really wasn't like that, like some sort of genocidal maniac, you know? And it all,
he was a very focused individual, knew what he wanted to do, and he honestly thought in his mind, mm-hmm. same as any of us, that we were doing something to help our fellow man, I mean, help our country.
Right.
I mean, we weren't making any money off of it. It was costing us money. We were risking going to prison. We were risking getting killed by the cartel. We're doing this because out of love for our fellow man.
Right.
I mean, you know, if we want to do something crazy and homicidal, we could have done it for profit. You know, I mean, Rick Spring, a long time ago. Rick Spring turned out to be something he wasn't, but he was a big Area Nations guy. He said something to me I'll never forget. Don't be a thug for free. Okay. Thing is, I mean, that's something that the media always leaves out. They think that there's people that just get off on entertaining these crazy, wild ideas that we, you know, that I don't know of anybody that's like that. If you ever see anybody that's got some sort of crazy ideas of, oh, man, it would be nice just to go and kill a whole bunch of people to say, I mean, the guy's crazy. He's not going to fit in socially. He'll be gone soon, one way or the other. And he'll be on to his next, you know, stunt for shock value. And people often use racialist politics and nationalism for just that. And, you know, I mean, it's terrible because it sets us all back and all that. But I have a hard time believing this guy fit into that, that he was somebody that, you know, was out there just wanting to do harm. And, I mean, if that was true, why didn't he go out there and shoot the first group of Mexicans he came across?
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
I mean, if it's all about just killing a bunch of people and going out in a blaze of glory, then why waste all this time, you know, with water and snack cakes and calling border enforcement and organizing people, fundraising, you know, and finding time to stop and help out people staying in the desert. And, I mean, it's just, like I said, I mean, I know we're kind of going over here a little bit, and I apologize, but like I said, I'm confused. I mean, maybe these guys, I just don't know people like I think I do.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, I do not see the JT Reddy I knew doing any of those things. I remember stories he'd tell me of holding this little girl and feeding this little girl. I remember calling his house, and JT's like, I'm trying to get the baby to sleep. Call back later. Okay. You know, and stuff like that. I mean,
it's no way that it doesn't seem plausible that the guy would want to do something like the
don't. And I mean, it's somebody that was so tender towards young people and little kids. We'd go somewhere, and you know, little kids gravitate to anybody big.
Right.
I mean, he's a big guy. He's bigger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty in good shape and all, but I mean, he was kind of big and just barrel chested, and kids would come up to him all the time.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I mean, because little children are attracted to something
big
that's out of the ordinary, you know. And they'd come up to him, and he'd cut up with them and play with them. And, I mean, you know, we could be, you know, somebody's shoe could be on fire, and he'd just ignore it, he'd play the kid.
Wow.
And, I mean, I tell you what, these guys, like I said to you earlier, I'll see that little girl's face the rest of my life.
Okay.
Irregardless of how it went down, nobody can change the fact that little girl's gone.
Yeah.
She's dead. Yeah. And I wish that it was cartel or something like that, because then we could make it right somehow.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, that's a stretch, even knowing that. But I mean,
you know, you, Chris, you've really given us a lot to think about for this case, and I really appreciate you coming on and giving us that insight that you've been able to. It really has been appreciated.
As I said earlier, this is the first and only interview I'm giving.
I'm honored.
Yeah, well, I mean, I knew what to expect going on here. I wasn't getting blindsided, and, you know, we're going to sit here and, you know, talk about 6 million Jews or something crazy like that. It's going to be the facts, unbiased, you know, and I'm not going to get lucky a second time. So I'm not doing any more interviews or answering any more questions about it. I mean, which I really hadn't answered any questions here. All I'm saying is that this is a JT that I knew.
Right.
And, you know, I try to see the good in everybody. I mean, even when I have an enemy, I try to, like, think to myself, you know, there's something in this person that, you know, I probably would agree with, maybe, or something. And I don't know.
Yeah.
But in any case, it's been a real good talking to you. And it's honestly, I do feel a little better, at least temporarily. But I'll tell you one thing. If there's a little tiny glimmer of light to come out of this, my child sure getting spoiled for the past couple of days. Man, today she went to a petting zoo. She got to go to a playground. Man, I took her everywhere because I was just thinking to myself how fragile life is, especially for a little child like that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I just got back from all that there at like 10:30. But, I mean, everybody out there, give your loved ones an extra hug because, like I said, life's such a fragile thing.
Right.
And, you know, when something like this can come up and surprise us in the night like it did, I mean, it can happen to anybody's life. And, you know, all politics aside, all lifestyle and everything else, I mean, you know, go, you've got loved ones around you, go tomorrow, wake up with the idea you're going to treat them right,
yeah.
You know, at least for a day in light of everything that's happened.
All right.
Anyways.
Well, thank you for being in, Chris, and really appreciate it again.
All right. We'll talk to you later, these guys.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right. And that was Chris Drake talking about his good friend. You could tell from the emotion there that he was – you know, he's been very impacted by all of this. So, you know, sometimes, you know, people were complaining in the chat room, oh, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, you got to let people have their say, you know. So anyway, this is the News Guy Show. And I will be back after this. I'm going to play another Beastie Boys song. And this one is, of course, their classic. You gotta fight.
Now, boys, don't get into any trouble while mommy and daddy are gone. And don't make a mess.
Do you like parties?
Yeah.
We can invite all our friends and have soda and pie.
Yeah.
I hope no bad people show up.
Wake up like a school, man, you don't wanna go.
Fight for your right to party with the Beastie Boys in memory of Adam Yauch, who passed away this week at the age of 47, and this is the News Guy show, and this is the News Guy, and yes, we got a lot of people on the chat room. Some people were complaining that I went too long with Chris, but, you know, it was definitely needed to have. And we're going to bring on the intern right now. Ladies and gentlemen, bring on the intern. Hello, intern.
I've been unmuted. Hey, now. How's it going, man? Oh, boy. Hey, did you see, what was it, this one called guy, was it Chris Hayes or whatever the hell his name is, when was it MSLSD, and he found this article, my face-based retirement. As apparently one of these
somebody was on. Are you on LSD right now? What's going on here? I don't understand what this is all about.
Yeah, let me link it in. But this guy was writing, pissing about how his retirement. You know, he contributed his 401k and it wasn't adequate because he made all these stupid decisions. You know, but you got to look at this thread. I'm going to mail you the article at some point.
Oh.
But, you know, a lot of things rolled through my mind while this guy was talking, you know, because of this article. And the one thing that comes to my mind, and I'm going to, excuse me, I'm going to leave the person's name out. A certain talk show host whom we know and love, are very fond of, is constantly complaining about public sector retirements.
Which one is that?
Gee, I wonder who.
Limbo?
Huh?
Limbo?
No, John, in a certain island.
Yeah. Okay, you know, because I have to be honest with you. I mean, I haven't really been listening to the show either.
Holy shit.
I've been listening to, like, Frank comes on, and then when Frank goes off, I turn off the show. I turn off the thing, and I just, because it's like 4 hours. He's going on, and he's playing these clips for, like, 20 minutes. And last night, he's going on with this Secretariat movie again, and he's playing the whole GD thing all over again. And it's like, come on already. Enough with this Secretariat movie, all right?
Yeah.
And
I can't. I don't have time for this. I'd rather listen. Come on. I mean, yeah. Martin Lynch dead, and then this guy, I'm going to go crazy. I'm already crazy.
Well, with all that star-gazing shit you were doing a few weeks back, maybe you are going a little bit nuts, huh?
That's reminding me. They got the full moon out there, and it's some sort of a super full moon. After the show is over, I hope that this... Oh, my God, because the sun is going to be coming up soon. I may have missed it already. Oh, my God.
Yeah, at least still got it here, but anyway...
The sun is coming up here.
Oh, my.
No, I missed full moon. I got to wait for more years.
But let's follow this logically, okay? You know, he complains about public sector retirements and whatever. But the thing is, first of all, the Social Security program, let's say, or you could have any pension program that would be run by the federal government. Let's say there was one like they have in Canada. We wouldn't be having near as much trouble with financing any retirement system if we weren't always butting our nose into other people's wars.
Period.
I mean, even let's follow this in my mind. If we were going to war with anybody over the past decade, okay, all this stuff in 9/11 started in where? It wasn't Iraq. It was Afghanistan. Why didn't we go there first? It doesn't make sense to me. But anyway.
Didn't we go there first?
Yeah, but then all the, you think about it, all the attention went to Iraq after that.
Yeah.
For a good long time. Too long.
The war in Iraq, though, I mean, that was just something I don't even really understand what that whole thing was about anyway. It's just, you know, it could be a lot of different reasons for that whole thing.
Right.
But nobody will ever understand it. But, you know, the whole thing is that, you know, just to take the flip side of the argument, if you will, because, you know, conflict is good for talk radio, so I will just take that a flip side.
Sure.
Now, let's say, okay, we do not engage in any wars across the world, and other we don't get involved in other people's wars, you know, but then the other side of the this situation, say the Russians, okay, or maybe Al Qaeda, you know, the if you want to buy into the whole thing about the Muslim Brotherhood, you know, promoting Islam and trying to, you know, take over countries and convert them to Sharia law and all of that, you know, they're not going to all of a sudden pull away either. And so our nature abhors a vacuum. So when we pull out, something's got to fill that space, and that's going to be the other side.
Right. Well, you know, I'm not arguing against it altogether, but if you're going to do it efficiently. Go after the target that actually needs to be weeded out. In this case, the problem has been and was Afghanistan, and continues to be. And either way, the target that we should have gone after was the one that was ignored. And it
looks more and more like that Pakistan was the country we should have invaded instead of Iraq.
Really? I mean, think about it. I mean, Jews and Christians were functioning in Iraq without any problem. There was no problem there. The problem for Christians in those other countries were, though, and we should have been going after them, I think.
Yeah, you know, that's a very good point you say about Iraq, because within the Iraqi government, there were Shia and Sunni and Christian. You know, Tariq Aziz, who was the most famous guy who was a Christian in the cabinet there, the Saddam regime, you know, he was a Christian. And they had Sunni and Shia working in the cabinet together all over the place.
Yeah. But the point here is a reasonable involvement with the rest of the world. Being friends with other countries without entangling alliances. Was that sound familiar?
Yeah.
Right, dealing with the rest of the world that way, but also bringing a good enough industrial base back to this country.
Yes.
where if everything was running properly, you know, we could fund whatever, But the thing is, we're not we're manufacturing in this country. But it wasn't like several, you know, at least 20 years ago, there was a steel plant down the street. And you go further back into the 50s and 40s, the steel plant down the street from me was knocking out vast amounts of business. And, you know, now that that's gone, you know, what's going to replace it? You aren't going to have any public treasury or taxes unless you have a decent manufacturing base. Also, are we going to rely on, let's say, the Chinese to manufacture our computers, to manufacture our tanks? I wouldn't trust the Chinese with any of that mess. We need to bring the manufacturing back here to secure our defense in the meantime.
There have been a couple of instances, and the one that pops into my mind is that there was this it was a nice little thing. It was not really a computer, but it was this thing where you could load. It was like a computerized picture frame, okay? And you would upload your JPEGs into this thing, and it would rotate the JPEGs. But so it would stand there like a picture frame, but instead of just one picture, it would rotate these pictures, you know, as many as you wanted. I think like 20 was the max or something like that. But then it turned out, these things were manufactured in China. It turned out that all of these things had like some sort of worm or a virus or something, like adware, some sort of thing like that. They had to all be recalled.
Oh, goodness.
And, you know, how are you going to, with something as simple as and as innocuous as a computerized picture frame is going to be infected with malware, then God knows what else is going to be infected with malware, or God knows what else. You know, maybe something will be infected with that virus that shuts down the computer systems in a nuclear reactor. You know, that we don't need.
Yeah, and it's sort of a related thing. Think about also, here's another thing where Frank got it wrong. I like the right perspective, okay? And they have a lot of great things to say. I do listen to the show when Frank is on there, I must admit. It's not the same without, you know, sort of those two people, you know, a yin and yang sort of effect, them canceling each other out so that one doesn't get too far out of hand, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was Frank that told the story of where a Russian plane had crashed somewhere where we could get a hold of it and investigate the components of their aircraft, and they found vacuum tubes in the radar and everything else, vacuum tubes all throughout this war jet. And Frank was saying, well, that's ancient, and I say, no, it isn't. And the reason is because of these EMP bombs that have the potential of wiping out this entire country, you know, let's say.
It's like a reserve.
Right. But with tubes, an EMP, you know, blast will not wipe out tubes. Big difference. The Russians had the right thing on their mind by leaving the vacuum tubes in their radar and the rest of the jets.
Right.
So it's not really ancient technology. When you get right down to it, it's a smart thing to do, and they really should. I hope, for God's sake, that the jets that we have here, the war jets, aren't filled with solid state, because with an EMP, it could wipe out our entire air force.
They would just fly out of the sky like lead balloons, if you will. You know,
right? So you know, just a. Anytime you hear something, even if it's a source like Frank and John, who are fairly trustworthy, question it. For your own sake, question everything you hear.
But everything that they say about economics, I question, and I actually disagree with. But, you know, but we won't get into that right now.
But, you know, there's just a whole bunch of things. Just when it comes to somebody, this guy whining about, oh, how he messed up his retirement. Well, the thing is, everybody's retirement is going to be messed up. Everybody's lifestyle is going to be messed up if we don't start doing the right thing and start doing it ASAP.
You know, I kind of think that, you know, even if
even if, you know, the heavens, you know, God saw it fit and he elect and he got Ron Paul into office, and Ron Paul was able to implement his Restore America plan. I somehow kind of think that would not be enough at this point with the economy. I don't know why, but I just have this very strange feeling. It's just like the inertia is just headed towards a certain negative level, and until that inertia completely dissipates, it's not going to go back up, and it's going to be going down for a long time. And
basically, I think it's going to take the 1% getting their ass kicked to get them into order.
That's
really what it boils down to. They're going to need, you know, example, it has happened in history where the oligarchy, which was the word that you used regarding Russia earlier, that's when you look at Germany pre-World War II, that's what happened. You had to basically carry wheelbarrows full of million mark notes to buy a loaf of bread. And
right.
I'm sure that stuff affected the 1%, the oligarchy that were living in Germany before World War II. It's going to take something like that to get their ass in the order, too. And eventually, it's going to correct. It's going to be ugly, but it's going to have to happen, most likely.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to have to happen. And, you know, it is very, well, I don't know. I don't want to say, you know, like look too far into the future, but I don't know what's going to happen with it. But, you know, I think what's going to happen, I think at least in the short term, like Obama will get elected. I think that, you know, the left will take over on a certain level, and then they'll just
go ahead. Right. Go ahead, because I was going to mention something. Go ahead.
Because there is nothing that they can really do to stop this inertia from going on. It's all going to happen on their watch. The Republicans will turn around and say, okay, we gave Obama 8 years to try to clean this up. Not only 4 years, but we gave him an extra term. He had 8 years. And look at it. It's completely shit. It's completely falling to shit. And we have to go and do this extreme measure now. You know, we have to go in and take over and clean up after what has happened.
Yeah.
And I think that's happened all over the world as well.
Yeah. Well, the Depression back in the 30s, it was worldwide, as you'll recall.
Yeah.
It wasn't just here. And Germany, which was sort of, I mentioned that, it sort of ties in there. Their million mark note problems basically happened around the same time. But the thing is, what is it with this, I'm really pissed off about this. What is it with this, you know, goddamn GOP? And they keep bringing people like Romney, you know, to run, or retreads like Gingrich, you know. And they're oligarchs, but Romney is a particular, here we have a guy who basically took fully functioning steel companies and ruined them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He came and outright ruined all. He'll say, well, I brought up businesses like Staples. And yeah, he mentions his successes, but he doesn't seem to mention his failures. And some of them are really, really bad failures. And you just look out on the net enough, and you'll see all sorts of not just the okay things that Romney has done, but basically a lot of stuff that he did with the steel industry, taking fully functioning steel plants and basically running them into the ground. And the GOP keeps pulling these retreads up and electing these retreads for the convention, and then wonder why people are voting for the Democrats, even though they're not really much better. Some cases worse.
It seems to me that this is all just done on some sort of seniority basis.
It is.
You know, whoever comes in second place in the last primary now gets to get the nomination the next time around. And that's just the way that it is with the Republican Party.
Yeah. Well, the Republicans and the Democrats' difference, what I heard explained like this. Think about Obama, right? The Democrats fall in love. Republicans fall in the line.
Yeah.
And you're seeing that now. you know, they had, you know, they had this, and I must admit, you know, there was a bunch of interesting debates and whatever, but eventually, you know, the powers that be decided, because of he was part of their oligarchy, that they wanted this Romney guy.
Yeah, that's very true. Very true. You know, I mean, well, who was going to be the alternative? I mean, they don't want to have Ron Paul in there, and and that's why they propped up Santorum and Gingrich all this time. Because then, if they did not prop up Santorum and Gingrich, it would have been Ron Paul versus Mitt Romney this entire time.
Yeah, exactly.
But so, Sheldon Adelstein piling in $5 million a pop to keep this fat bastard Newt Gingrich running. And, you know, and I don't mean,
And then
Santorum, I mean, Santorum, you know, he's got the Christian conservative base, you know, he's saying all these things. But then you could see he was starting to implode, and that had to have been intentional, you know, where he lashed out at this reporter, and he started making these ridiculous things about pornography, these ridiculous decrees that he, if I get elected, I'm going to outlaw pornography, blah, 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 blah. You know, and that had had to have been on his part. Had to have been.
Yeah, but it's just that the GOP keeps pulling up these totally unelectable types, and then wonder why they aren't getting anybody in there. You know, it's your fault. You know, basically that's what it comes down to. It's their fault. If we're having, like this, like I said, it's this oligarchy and a certain amount of seniority mixed in with it, you know, any number of things, really. But it's just, you know, I'm thinking of pulling the lever for whatever libertarian comes in or whatever conservative that comes up.
Well, you know, it's like
I'm protesting this time.
Gary Johnson has been polling 6% nationally, so maybe he's, you know, going to be the spoiler against Romney. But I do have this sneaking suspicion that the Republicans understand the economy a hell of a lot better than what the Democrats do. And they realize that there really isn't anything that they can do if they got into office to turn it around. And so they're just going to say, okay, let Obama get in there. Let him try to do whatever he wants to do, implement his Keynesian policies. Notice I said Keynesian. Then he's, you know, and then he'll just screw it up. And by the end of 4 years, the Republicans are turning around. Well, we gave this guy 8 years. Listen, you know, he couldn't pull it around. Look at the way the economy is. His policies have failed. Let us get in there and do what we want to do. I think that's what's going to happen.
Probably.
So what else is on the agenda there, intern?
Not much, but it's just when it comes right down to it, it's this frustration of just the finger pointing and the blame where it's not being the blame not being put where it's supposed to and putting the blame where it shouldn't be put. It's just really stupid. I mean. And I'll just put it this way. People just don't believe what I say, don't believe what news guys say, definitely don't believe what Alex Jones says. But when it comes right down to it, you know, and I tell everybody I run into, and it's of utmost importance, don't just look at Fox. They got a few good sides. Look at your MSNBC. Definitely look at BBC, for Christ's sakes. And, pull your news from a whole bunch of sources. You'll find the truth out there. But it's not always conservative. Sometimes it would seem to have a moderate or maybe even a leftist bent. I don't know. It's just I'm with you. You know, when it comes right down to it, it's going to be probably a pretty interesting decade. And I think that's it for now. So,
hey, but intern, I just wanted to let you know because, of course. I didn't get to do it in the first hour, but UF emailed me this week.
Oh, Known Turd?
Yes, Known Turd did write into me as Cletus Coldman, and he said this is the first one from 3 days ago on May 3rd. This is all from about May 3rd to May 4th. And he says, someone mails all of Stan's neighbors. He says, okay, my prediction for the future. That's the name of this. That's the title of this email. He says, someone mails all of Stan's neighbors with flyers warning them he is a sexual predator and a pedophile. Oh, my, that is terrible. Who would do such a thing? Stan fires back Gino and does something terrible to him. Gino drives southeast and does something physical to either Stan or Wojer. Gino winds up back in prison. UF laughs at that.
Yeah, definitely a known turd.
Yes.
Yeah. What is it with the, also these Nimbusters and all the interesting ones seem to be like 40-something with receding hairlines. there's a lot of bald Nimbusters out there, I notice. When they dig the pictures up on these guys, they're like bald as anything, man.
And then here's the other one. He says, Stan lies a lot. This is what Cletus Coleman is writing. He says, Stan lies a lot. I never tossed Nimbusters. I asked his previous host to remove certain information. I asked Stan before I asked them. Stan was such a dick, he got his own stupid ass tossed. Stan is delusional, a drunk, and a complete asshole. I am convinced he can't tell Nimbusters from the real world. Last Friday, I torn down the building that had my satellite dish up. And I torn down the building that had my satellite dish up. I have no plans to remount the satellite, and I will not trust Stan with an IP that has my name upon it. Of course, according to Stan, I post on Nimbusters every day. But he did post today, and he did post my IP information earlier.
Well, I'll just say for Stan, there's a logical reason he misspells frequently. It's learning disability. It's dyslexia. So what's a known Terry's excuse that he didn't pay attention to school?
I don't know. I think that unknown fucktard has he's just having fun, but it's just kind of crazy. I don't know. He's probably listening to this as we speak. So.
Yeah, and then there's the lawyer that wrote Stan who had terrible English usage.
Well, that was the whole thing. Yeah, he was UF was writing as a lawyer and in all caps and all kinds of crazy things like this. It was just
if you're going to hire a lawyer that writes like that, you should fire that lawyer.
Yeah,
unless, of course, it's you that's writing it. UF. and then there's all that stuff that goes to the ham, that's on the ham board. It makes me sort of wonder why I got a ham license in the first place, because I don't know. the old term for a poor, sloppy ham operator is a lid. It seems like this is a page full of lids.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, people who got ham licenses, but you kind of wonder how they passed the test.
Hmm.
Especially, I would like to know where that podcast was with Mark Morgan, whoever was going off. I'd like to hear that mess.
Yeah, I want to hear that.
Yeah, it says anything that's laden with profanity might sound halfway interesting to me.
But hey, check this out. This is from TornFreak.com. A judge has ruled that an IP address does not identify a person or a BitTorrent pirate.
Maybe not. I mean, all I know is about the local area networks, because I used to be on Comcast years ago. I don't know why, but I was. Well, actually, they were the only high-speed provider in Baltimore City. At least when you move into the county, you have several people that'll give you high-speed internet. Within Baltimore City, it's only Comcast. And you're on a local area network, and basically you could sneak into other people's computers through a back door, through certain ports.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, local area networks tend to be kind of leaky like that. And
right.
Given that, I mean, there's... if they wanted to, let's say, trace you down bad enough, they could the basis is the IP. And they go to that provider and they say, well, somebody from NIMBusters was doing this and that and that such. And you know, we want to find out who this person is and place them under arrest. They can do it. It's going to take a little bit, but they can do it.
Right, because this is some lawsuits that have been filed by BitTorrent. And, well, they're the copyright holders are filing them against BitTorrent. And the copywriters who start their cases, according to this article, generally provide nothing more than an IP address as evidence. Then they ask the court to grant a subpoena, allowing them to ask internet providers for personal details of the alleged offenders. But the problem is that the person listed as the account holder is often not the person who downloaded the infringing material. Just like you said, an IP address is not a person, you know. So that's what they're saying here, and it's very interesting, you know, because of all of these different problems that are involved with this. So at least the judge has been able to see this, see the logic of it, you know.
And you know, and the other side was, you know, they have these slap suits that have happened. A lot of, you know, the guy's a liberal, but he's sort of a libertarian sort of guy, it seems, Jello Biafra. And he has some excellent spoken word albums that will challenge your thinking. But he mentioned this in these slap suits. It's a strategic lawsuit against public participation. And basically what they do is if, let's say, I think it happened in the case of Southwestern employees that were trying to unionize. If I'm recalling correctly, don't quote me on this. But basically what they did was they found out who was organizing to try to unionize Southwest, and they went after these people and fired them. But they've got companies that can go, and if somebody's complaining about a certain company, they can go, and within a certain amount of time, find out who the person is. If you want it expedited, pay extra. You know, you can find within 72 hours who's posting complaints about a company, and then these companies will go and sue that person. And all they were really doing was having they were exercising their free speech rights about a corporation, and the corporation didn't like it and wanted to sue them over it. Well, you know, you wouldn't have that problem if you didn't treat your customers like crap, and what did they expect?
That's right. Right, that's right. It's very, very rough, you know. You know, they got to get better with their customer service. They got to treat their customers better. It's just a whole thing, you know. They have to understand that even though people are buying into their service, they still have to provide a good service. They still have to provide something that is worthy of paying all this money every month.
Exactly, and like I said, you know, protest does work. In many cases, you know, if people hadn't stood up and started complaining about the Bank of America wanting to charge $5 for usage of a crummy debit card that you can get through a credit union for free, if people hadn't stood up, they would have implemented another fee, which is unnecessary when you get right down to it.
Yeah.
Public participation is important. Everybody's public participation is important. And no, you know, unless there's an outright lie going on, nobody should be sued for exercising that right, period.
That's right. That's right. Very well said. Very well said. Well, is there anything else, intern?
That's it. And actually, I'm kind of worn out now. So I'll catch you next weekend or whenever. And I'll try to get my thoughts together and maybe collaborate with you over the week or whatever. Try to organize a better effort than the last two that I presented these. Like I said, it was an experiment, and those experiments kind of fell flat. So,
no, listen, there are no full experiments that fall flat. Experiments are experiments, so that's all that matters.
Right. And it wasn't like the old days where I would slip on the Hallicrafters, pop a crystal in there, throw some music, make some smart-ass comments, throw on the music, make some more smart-ass comments, and then get the reception reports from up and down the East Coast. And when you get right down to it, it's kind of cool getting a big chunk of letters from a mail drop of people asking for QSL cards and, well, you know, and sending out some rather funny cards like I did. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I guess, you know, the chat room kind of replaces that, the QSL cards or something like that, maybe.
Well, yes and no, but basically it's only verification. You know, I could set something up where, you know, if the email address is provided, I could, you know, create a QSL and send it to you, you know. Oh, and, I was going to put it on the chat room, but if anybody wants to supply any ideas for next week, was it the intern at email.is. That's it.
Okay.
I found
it. The intern at email.is.
Mm-hmm. I went to get somewhere in Scandinavia. It seems the only free one that I could use seemed to be one in Iceland. So that's kind of cool. I used to have yahoo.se as an address, which is Sweden, by the way. So, but anyway,
isn't Eurovision on next week?
Is it May week of the May 20th area? Like the the finals May 26th, which thank goodness is on a Saturday, but. So the www.eurovision.tv, I think, is the address.
Okay.
And for anybody who's interested in watching it, they do have a live stream on there.
Yes.
And you can see some look at Rush's entry. It was terrible. Okay. It was terrible.
Because Russia, that's surprising to hear, because Russia lately has been putting on some real efforts to, you know, win. But I guess since they won the one time, I guess they kind of have been slacking off now. You know, they won one year, they finally won, and then they just kind of slacked. But they
even brought
those lesbian pop stars a couple of years ago.
Yeah, what's that? That Maria
Serafovich?
Serafovich, whatever her name was, yeah. I mean, that was decent by Eurovision standards.
Yeah.
But I'll say something in comparison. I've seen both. I absolutely cannot stand American Idol.
What?
They may have based it on, you know, Eurovision ideas, mm-hmm. but that American Idol is the worst shit I've ever seen in my life. I can't stand it. I can't stand it. But, you know, Eurovision, actually, and that's the difference. You notice the word here is American Idol. They're looking for a star.
Yeah.
They're looking for the newest star. But with Eurovision, like I mentioned, you know, on that first show I did, it's a song contest. They're concentrating on the song instead, which, is, in my opinion, is a better bet.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And that's, I think, matches are still going on, but then they've kind of democratized it by allowing the phone call-ins, and the people who call in over the phone, well, the people who call in over the phone tend to cast their votes based on political alliances. It's very strange, because you'll see, like, all of the Scandinavian countries will vote for one another, all of the Eastern European countries will vote for one another, and what have you. So
what will happen is the Arabs will try to prove they're not voting against Jews by voting for Israel, and Israel will show that they love the Muslims by voting for the Islamic countries, and yeah, all sorts of crazy shit like that.
It's totally nuts. Totally nuts. So yeah, they should focus more on the song itself, you know, instead of the whole presentation of it. But yeah, what are you gonna do?
The best ones to look at, you know, the 50 Eurovision was kind of interesting. It was sort of in a formative stage at that point. It gets a little more interesting around the 60s, although it starts to sound more like American music at that point.
Okay.
But then you get into the 70s contest, the 70s and maybe the early 80s, and some of the contests that were done at that time were pretty damn good, actually. And a lot of decent artists came out of it, artists and songs came out of the 70s version and maybe into, like I said, the early 80s. And, you know, definitely the ones that download would be the entire contest for maybe 73, 74 when ABBA won. 76 was kind of interesting. And then there was Germany's entry for 1978. Go on to YouTube, ESC, 1979. That's what it was, ESC 1979 Germany. Okay. And this thing is so kitschy. It's hilarious. Germany 1979. That's all you need to put in the YouTube. And I know it's just, you're sitting there. The song was called Genghis Khan. And that was one of the strangest entries ever. The first thing I thought was gay, 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 gay. I mean, that was one of the queerest songs I've ever seen. But check out I'd say from about 1969 to maybe 1984, and check out the full contest on YouTube. They are available. I mailed a couple of them to you, so. But it seems like after about maybe 1985 or so, it's just, it became American Idol, more or less, the format that you see now. It's not bad. Compared to American Idol, it's definitely a lot better. It really is, but
I'm checking out the chat here, and Van Wadi is saying that let's see here, I will restart my show in 1 to 12 weeks. So 1 to 12 weeks, that's a long time. You know, you're going from 1 week to 3 months. I mean, you know, so make up your mind, Van Wadi.
Yeah, but, leave off the sandwiches, buddy.
Yeah.
I couldn't help it.
Oh, he's just on the show. It's very strange.
Leave off the sandwiches, buddy. That's all I can say.
Yeah. So anyway, if Van Wadi ever wants to call in, you know, call in Van Wadi.
Oh, no. Somebody said KM's deep voice is kind of sexy.
All right. Hey, intern, I'm going to let you go.
All right. It was fun. Catch you next week. And like I said, we'll, sort of keep in touch or whatever. And,
okay.
You know, everybody give me some ideas. You know, I don't want to bore you to death. And, you know, I wouldn't want to sit around only to have somebody give me a half an hour show and then cut and run. I wouldn't be upset. I wouldn't be blaming you if you were upset for that. It kind of makes sense, actually. You want to hear at least an hour of decent programming. So, but anyway, I'll catch you later. Have fun there. Have a great weekend. And I'll see you around.
Okay, thanks, intern. See you later.
Bye-bye.
And that was the intern, ladies and gentlemen. And you know, now they're saying Marty is going to call in, but I don't know if he is going to call in or not. He was on the chat before. He was wanting to call in, and so was some other guy. I forgot his name now, but this was when Chris was on. I think it was like Northwestern. I don't remember the name of the guy. But so I don't know if Dick Relenti or Dick Reltney, maybe he's probably Finkelschini also. If he wants to call in, I guess he can call in. Finkelschini is also Marty. I figured that one out. Anyway, if you guys want to call in, you can do so right now. If not, I think I'm just going to let me see. There were some couple of other things I wanted to get off my chest. Let's see here. Oh, yeah, about this Arizona governor. Arizona Governor Jim Brewer, and this is from WorldNet Daily, so, you know. On Friday night, signed a pro-life bill that would prevent taxpayers funding of the Planned Parenthood abortion business, which does more than one-fourth of all abortions in the United States. The Whole Woman's Wealth Funding Priority Act of Arizona will defund abortion providers such as Planned Parenthood of state family planning money. The bill is based on model legislation developed by the SBA List and the Alliance Defense Fund and prioritizes family planning funds away from abortion-centered businesses like Planned Parenthood to entities that provide women with comprehensive health care. The measure prohibits the state or any local government from using public money to contract with an organization that includes abortions. So that's an interesting development. I mean, you know, and it's interesting in the fact because the Democrats
have not really focused on abortion this time around. If you remember with this whole Sandra Fluck thing, that was about pro contraception. It wasn't about abortion. So maybe with that, and of course that whole thing was just such a staged event, you know, Nancy Pelosi holding that that fake hearing in the Congress and all of this, you know. Maybe somebody in the Democrat Party has done some internal polling and figured out that, hey, wait a minute, you know, abortion is just, you know, we can't win that anymore. The public has been convinced that abortion is the wrong thing, and they're just going to move to contraception. That could be it, and that may be what has emboldened Arizona to promote such a piece of legislation, or at least to sign it into law. So anyway, that's pretty interesting. Let's see. Anyway, I think you know what I'm going to do, because I'm kind of tired right now, and I don't see that Marty is calling in. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to call it a night, because I've been off for 2.5 hours. And Ken McMahon has left, and Pete Dembski and everybody else has left. So I'm just going to call it a night, and I will say shoust to you all. And I will see you next week. And until then, bye.
Folks, you always hear right wing and left wing, and we want to tell you, the opposite of right isn't left. The opposite of right is wrong.
I love you. Be gone.